Today's WBFO brief was recorded at around 8:30 in the morning. This is WBFO News.
Achik Dwaga man will spend 30 years in prison after he was convicted of sex trafficking by coercion. According to the U.S. Attorney's Office, 40-year-old James Fox engaged in a series of commercial sex acts with victims from 2018 through 2021. In many of the cases, the victims were addicted to heroin. When the victims were on the verge of physical withdrawal sickness, Fox would provide a small amount of heroin and crack cocaine to keep them dependent while coercing them to engage in commercial sex acts. Health officials are reminding residents of the seasonal dangers of mosquitoes after a case of West Nile virus was found in Niagara County. The resident who was infected by a mosquito bite is currently receiving care at a local hospital. According to the State Department of Health, 70 to 80% of those infected by West Nile virus show no symptoms. However, some cases may incur fever, headache, muscle weakness, and paralysis. Experts advise wearing a long-sleeve shirt and pants while outside during the increased mosquito activity times around dusk and dawn. And the University of Buffalo is expanding its research into artificial intelligence with the help of $10 million in federal funding. Senator Chuck Schumer announced the allocation will launch a new Center for Early Literacy and Responsible AI that will focus on using the developing technology to improve reading skills. Schumer cited statistics from 2022 that found only 33% of the nation's fourth graders achieved reading comprehension. A Salamanca man convicted of rape and murder who was arrested after he fled parole in July will not be heading back to state prison. A state judge has ruled that Edward Kent will be returning to supervised housing in Dutchess County after sentencing the convicted killer to a 7-day sentence of time already served. Kent was convicted of the 1998 rape and murder of Penny Brown and was eventually granted parole in March of 2023. Next week is Banned Books Week, and the Buffalo and Erie County Public Library is working to highlight the 4,000 books that were banned last year, the most on record, according to PEN America. County Library Director John Spears says it's vital the public pays attention to what he calls censorship.
People are trying to substitute their own judgment for another person's freedom. Book bans take away everyone's freedom. The freedom to read is something that is fundamental to who we are as a nation and who we are as a people. If you don't have the ability to choose what to read, what worlds to explore, you're limiting yourself or you're being limited by others.
Spears acknowledges libraries are a public resource and the public has a right to voice concerns with their offerings. Sometimes, he says, those concerns are valid. For example, books with outdated medical information or ones that are marketed as children's books but should be pushed to teen or young adult sections. There's more on Banned Books Week at the library's website, buffalolib.com/banned books.
This WBFO Brief podcast is made possible by Canisius University, where high-flying grifts find a top-flight education. For the last 8 years, Canisius has been recognized on U.S. News' list of best colleges and universities. Learn more at canisius.edu.
Well, out of Canada's largest physicians organization, the Canadian Medical Association, has apologized to the country's Indigenous peoples. The apology is for the role of the medical profession in the past and ongoing harms to Native people. And as correspondent Dan Karpachuk reports, the head of the CMA says her association is also committed to owning its past wrongs and doing whatever it can to correct them.
The somber ceremony at a conference hall in Victoria began with CMA President Dr. Joss Reimer taking the podium.
The Canadian Medical Association is deeply sorry for the harms First Nations, Inuit, and Métis peoples have experienced and continue to experience in the Canadian health system. The racism and discrimination that Indigenous peoples and healthcare providers face is deplorable, and we are deeply ashamed.
The outgoing president also spoke. Dr. Alika LaFontaine in 2022 became the first Indigenous president in the CMA's 157-year history.
Like most Canadian institutions, the CMA has played a role in Canada's history of racism, discrimination, and segregation of Indigenous peoples. Today, the CMA is taking an important step in its reconciliation journey with Indigenous peoples. After years of internal work, the CMA is sharing and owning its history.
Current President Joss Reimer says the actions and inactions of the medical profession throughout history led to racism, neglect, and abuse, adding that the profession has not lived up to the ethical standards it is expected to uphold. She says the CMA's purpose is to help create a more sustainable, accessible, and equitable healthcare system for all patients and providers. After a multi-year review of its archives, it found a long history of harm caused by Canadian doctors. Among those misdeeds were the Indian hospitals, where Indigenous patients received substandard care, children subjected to experiments at residential schools, forced relocations of Inuit patients with tuberculosis to sanatoriums far from their homes and families, and forced sterilizations, the latest in 2019. Dr. Paula Cashin is the vice chair of the CMA's board of directors.
Medical experimentation was conducted on Indigenous adults, including studying the effects of nutritional interventions and testing experimental tuberculosis vaccines and treatments. We still do not know the full extent of medical experimentation on Indigenous children or adults.
Cashin says the organization is still in the process of moving away from the segregated, racist healthcare model that the Indian hospital system perpetuated. Some, like Métis elder Jim DeRoche, say the apology is a good beginning.
I have always believed we need to know the truth before we can have reconciliation. I've always believed in that. By issuing this formal apology, the Canadian Medical Association has taken the first steps in its commitment to seeking the truth.
DeRoche also acknowledged that rebuilding the trust will take a long time because of the damage. Other Native leaders say they want more than an apology, they want concrete actions. The CMA says it will now focus on advancing health care for Indigenous peoples and to make sure that happens within the principles of reconciliation. And there will be regular updates of the Association's Indigenous health initiatives. For WBFO News, I'm Dan Karpinchuk in Toronto on the Canadian Beat.
St. Bonaventure drops a Woj bomb. Clarence hosts Frontier on Friday Night Lights. The Bisons fans get appreciated tonight. And the Sabres open the preseason tomorrow. I'm Jack Cruiser. This is The Scoreboard for Friday, September 20th. Across the sports world, and specifically the basketball world, fans have become accustomed to breaking news posts blasted out by ESPN insider Adrian Wojnarowski, colloquially known as a Woj bomb. This week, Wojnarowski dropped the mother of all Woj bombs, announcing his retirement from the insider game, and with it, his new position he started in Western New York. Returning to his alma mater, Woj is joining the athletics department at St. Bonaventure University, joining the staff as general manager of the men's basketball program. This move comes just months after the Bonnies hired Bob Beretta as vice president and director of intercollegiate athletics in July. With the recent changes to NCAA athletics, managing name, image, and likeness deals with student athletes, working with collectives to allocate funds within the department, and recruiting within the transfer portal, all will be among the duties for Wojnarowski in brown and white, looking to build on the championship teams of the past in Olean. The Lindy Ruff era has begun, well, resumed in Buffalo as the newly rehired head coach took to the ice with the Sabres for the start of training camp this week, and with it brought back a lot of nostalgia. The deja vu hasn't hit because of Ruff wearing the blue and gold, but rather with the way he runs a practice, for example, having the entire team drop and do push-ups for making a mistake during a drill. Ruff's focus at practice this week has backed up the phrase he's repeated ad nauseum. Get better every day. Fans will get their first look at Coach Ruff behind the Sabres bench at KeyBank Center Saturday night as the Sabres open their preseason schedule versus Pittsburgh. Puck drop is at 7 p.m. We've been blessed with two high-scoring, back-and-forth games to open the high school football season on Friday Night Lights, with games featuring standout talent all over the field. Tonight, we turn our attention to a team eyeing down a state championship run as the Clarence Red Devils host Frontier. Clarence has arguably the most skilled quarterback in Western New York, both physically and mentally, in Bryce Toobin. The senior set program records for every passing stat possible in his junior season, leading Clarence to a Section 6 championship for the first time in a decade.
Flanked by classmates Jeff Long and Patrick Wind, the Red Devils will play their home opener tonight, hosting a team that Clarence head coach Paul Bergio calls dangerous. The Frontier Falcons may have been on the wrong side of the score in their first 2 weeks, but first-year head coach Joe Fasciana is building a culture of nonstop hustle. Learning from a non-conference game versus Jamestown to open the year, the Falcons hung in with Niagara Wheatfield in a divisional loss last week. Frontier highlights sophomore Braden Manns, who could very well be on his way to developing into the section's next elite quarterback. Friday Night Lights is live tonight on WBFO and WNED Create at 7 p.m. Across Western New York, there have been some football games forfeited due to illness and injuries leading to a lack of available players. To this point, St. Francis has forfeited their non-conference game versus Catholic Memorial out of Wisconsin, and Tonawanda has forfeited their C-North divisional game versus Alden. There are a handful of other enticing matchups across the area. In the Southern Tier, 2-0 Salamanca travels to 2-0 Southwestern. In Erie County, undefeated Depew hosts 2-0 Lackawanna. Up in Niagara County, 2-0 Starpoint welcomes 1-1 Williamsville East. All three of those games are set for tonight at 7 p.m. Just three games remain in the baseball season in Buffalo as the Bisons wrap up their 2024 campaign at home this weekend. Tonight, the herd hosts Fan Appreciation Night featuring uniforms, concession deals, and discounts at the team store, all of which were voted on by the fans. That game is tonight versus Wilkes-Barre Scranton, first pitch at 6 o'clock. The UB Bulls football team sits at 2-1 on the season and heads to Northern Illinois for the MAC opener tomorrow. Buffalo takes on the number 23-ranked Huskies, who come off a major upset, defeating then-5th-ranked Notre Dame 2 weeks ago. Kickoff into DeKalb, Illinois is slated for 3:30 Eastern tomorrow. This has been The Scoreboard for Friday, September 20th. I'm Jack Cruiser for WBFO Sports.
And from listeners like you, who donate to this NPR station.
For Theater Talk on WBFO, I'm Anthony Chase.
And I'm Peter Hall.
And where were you, Curtain Up Night?
I went over to the stage used by Theater of Youth, where First Look Buffalo is putting on a new play called Tea Party, about a couple of cross-dressing men. But what makes the play interesting is that not only does Frank, played by Andrew Zakari, have a secret from his wife that he's a cross-dresser, but as it turns out, everybody on stage has something that they're a little uncomfortable about revealing. And I thought it was your formula, more or less, for the well-made play. We set the stage. There are little secrets. We know what's going on before the actors on stage know.
And just to clarify, I did not invent the well-made play.
Wow. Well, it's only 200 years old, the concept.
Yeah, others did that before me. I was at Shea's Lobby, where Starring Buffalo featured Michelle Marie Roberts and Broadway's Marcus Poole, James, and three wonderful high school students in a concert. It was great. Joe Iskar at the piano. We got the VIP seats, which meant that you got to sit up on the rail and they brought you champagne and little desserts and things, which was just lovely and a nice way to spend Curtain Up and then spill out onto the sidewalk where everyone you ever met was there. And then, of course, following that, I think for both of us, nonstop theater going all week. The next afternoon, I was at the matinee of Dracula, which is a little odd, vampires in the daytime and all of that. But I'd been looking forward to it because Chris Kelly, who directed it, does very well on those reimagined classics. He has that camp sense of humor. And it was our first opportunity to see Keely Sheridan, the new artistic director of Irish Classical Theatre Company, on stage, and the first time to see her husband, Jorge Luna, on stage. He played Dracula. She played Lucy, and they were marvelous and hilarious. And I described them as prepared to become Buffalo's Alfred Lunt and Lynn Fontanne. And then I was reminded, didn't you say that about Anthony Alcacer and Kate Locanti Alcacer previously? I thought, oh, dear.
Well, I did notice a parallel between Jorge Luna and Anthony Alcacer. When they take their shirts off, man, the audience reacts positively.
I don't think that was in the job description for the artistic directors of Irish Classical Theatre Company, but it has happened twice. But I think that married couples in this theater, you know, like Jessica Tandy and Hume Cronin, like Kelly Copps and Steve Copps, they perform together, and frequently a common interest and talent is what brings them together in the first place. But Dracula is just so silly, yet fun. It's very brisk. It's very inventive, done minimally on a set by David Butler, and it is great fun.
I second that, absolutely. For something that, well, is not fun, but very well acted, I went over to see The African Company Presents Richard III, which is historically a story about two companies, an African-American company putting on Shakespeare's play, Richard III, going up against a white company which had imported an actor from Europe and had a lot of reasons to shut down that African company for stealing their audience. So at times it was very uncomfortable, but the acting was so sublime.
Well, that's a fascinating piece of theater history. Ira Aldridge had been the great African-American classical actor and one of those artists who had to go to Europe to have a proper career. And we're talking 1820s. This is absolutely concurrent with slavery. It's also part of the reason that import of a British company, why I am rather enthusiastic about the American spelling of theater, T-H-E-A-T-E-R, when referring to the American theater. It has been a contentious part of our history, and it dates back to incidents like this.
The African Company Presents Richard III over at Ujima Theater.
I'm looking forward to getting over to Ujima to see that under the direction of Curtis Lavelle. And we both saw Newsies, bumptious production, co-production of Shays and the Cavanocchi over at 710 Main. Big, joyous show.
And a great vehicle to take younger people. The movie, although panned by the critics, was embraced by young people back in the 90s. And this production is also being embraced by younger people. So if you want to take the family to anything, it probably should be Newsies.
Eric Deeb Weaver directing and choreographing, and Glenn Chitty as Jack Kelly. He's marvelous. From my hometown, by the way. But he's really terrific. And Heather Casseri, who plays Catherine Plummer, née Pulitzer. They're both great. Complete cast of terrific people. Yeah, the young musical theater talent is impressive.
Well, we're about out of time, but just some quick notes. I haven't seen Twisted over at O'Connell nor Shipwrecked yet at Roadless Travel.
I saw them both at the tail end of the weekend, both light in weight. Let's talk about them once we've all gotten to see them.
Okay.
Okay. For Theater Talk on WBFO.
I'm Peter Hall.
And I'm Anthony Chase.
Don't forget to like or subscribe so you can help others find this podcast. And if you love it, leave a review too. The WBFO Brief Podcast and the award-winning journalism of WBFO's news team are made possible by our members. Thank you for listening.